Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. Kathy Frey here from Motherwise, and welcome to this webinar podcast. And today's topic is about when it is day 3 to 4 after having a baby, because lots has been going on in that last 48 hours, especially if this is your first baby. Boy, you've just had the most massive learning curve. So day 3 to 4 is kind of an interesting phrase, because sometimes women are right in the depths of baby blues at that stage. You're feeling kind of emotional. It's okay, absolutely normal. Your hormones have had seismic changes, and so how you could not be emotional at that time is kind of physiologically impossible. But somehow 1 out of 5 women don't get teary-eyed, but for the rest of us, it's all very normal. And also, this is typically a time when you might be starting to see some signs that your milk is coming in, your full milk, because you've been making colostrum in that first couple of days or first 3 or 4 days. So certainly as midwives, when we see a woman in the depths of baby blues and getting a little bit teary-eyed and the tissue box is coming out, we get kind of excited, to be honest, because that means we know that milk is coming in. That's a great sign. All right, even though it feels a bit miserable at the time, to be honest. And that is not the day to decide to go home, right? To sort of self-discharge yourself and go, I'm just so homesick, I need to go home now. Okay, yeah, no, don't do it. Bad decision. Your goal is to arrive at your front door with knowing confidently that your breastfeeding is successfully established competently. Okay, that's your goal. And honey bun, your milk hasn't even arrived, or it's just arriving. It's not the time to commit postnatal facility hurry curry. Although, to be honest, some of them are actually really discharging you at this stage, which is just super hard on women, sending them home on day 3 like that. But anyway, it is what it is. Okay, so things, I'm going to give you a little bit of a list for mum and a list for baby. Okay, so firstly, list for mum. You certainly, if you have not had a decent examination since the birth, then this is kind of time to basically particularly have the midwife check your perineum, especially if there's been sutures there, make sure they're healing well, and check a Caesar wound if you had surgical delivery of baby, and obviously, and also check your breasts and your nipples. They need to do a visual check. Right, and make sure that the breasts have got no signs of getting mastitis, and that you're aware of those signs and symptoms of mastitis. So that it can be sort of particularly red patches or red streaks on your breasts, and they're quite sort of, they can be kind of subtle. So I do recommend that you are checking your breasts naked in front of a mirror every day, including lifting them up and checking underneath the part of the breast that might be hidden when you're standing in front of a mirror, and make sure that there's no red patches or red streaks. And if there is, then it would be a really good idea to have some antibiotics. I'm not a huge antibiotic fan. I don't believe in handing them out willy-nilly. In fact, I can tell you that our children have never had antibiotics for a secondary infection, but that's a whole other discussion about homeopathy and naturopathy. But unless you have got good access rapidly, please, to your naturopath, your homeopath, to give you something alternate that you can use for the next 6 hours to make sure you get on top of it. If not, then get some antibiotics quickly on board, because you definitely don't want to get mastitis that could potentially turn into a breast abscess, which is a hideous thing to have to recover from. Okay, that's hospitalization, IV drips. Awful, awful, awful. Okay, so the commonest time that women get mastitis is when they are first-time mothers. because they miss it. The other sign and symptom of mastitis is feeling like you're coming down with a bit of a flu, a little bit of a cold, like getting sort of hot and cold shivers, sort of just feeling a bit off, really. Just want to sort of tuck yourself into bed. And that's probably mastitis. So let your caregiver know so that you don't let that progress. All right. And what are signs of the other signs and symptoms you need to be aware of is a womb infection and a wound infection. Womb and wound. So wound infections can start to look quite angry. So that's your perineum. If your perineum is just getting every day sorer and sorer and sorer, that's not normal. That's not okay. Or if your Caesar wound is getting sort of angrier and pussier, and like if things are regressing, not progressing, that's not okay. And if you start to get foul smelling discharge. Now, discharge of lochia is kind of got its own sort of funky scent anyway, a little bit like an intensive period scent, to be honest. But now we're talking of like off, like rotting smell, like really gross. And there could be a little bit of placenta or membranes left in your womb that you need to be talking to your health professional about. Okay, so womb infection, wound infection, breast infection, those are all the things you need to know about. And remember, they all can come with fever. So if you're spiking a bit of a temperature, that's another sign that something's up. And when you spike a temperature in general, you shiver, you feel, your body naturally gives you fever when you have infection because it slows down bacterial reproduction. So it's a very clever thing, and we don't actually want to completely reduce your fever back down to a normal temperature. A mild fever with an infection is helpful. What we don't want you to do is have some roaring, ridiculously severe high infection temperature. That's not okay. So if you do have an infection, just know if you do have a temperature and you're feeling hot and cold chills, that's a red flag. You need to find out what's going on. And you're very vulnerable in these days for that to happen, especially in that first 1 to 2 weeks. Okay, psychologically, you want to know that you are feeling confident in the home environment, that whether you've already shifted home or maybe you had a home birth and you've been home the same the whole time, or maybe you're about to discharge. But you need to be feeling like, you know, you're reasonably confident, or at least you feel confidently that you've got the assistance that you need. Especially with breastfeeding, you definitely need to have in-person assistance there. And if you don't have access to a doula or a lactation consultant, or you're not getting lots of visits from your midwife, then another option that is free is if you've got a girlfriend or a family member who is very experienced with breastfeeding successfully. So this is hopefully a woman who has breastfed 3 or 4 babies. She knows what she's doing at that stage. And also there's organisations like the La Leash League, etc. They can be really helpful too. And what else I've got? I'm just checking my little list here. I don't want to miss anything. Make sure that you definitely are having enough rest. Boy, look, here's the golden rule. If your baby is sleeping and you are not sleeping, you're wasting your sleep time. What was that? If your baby is sleeping and you're not sleeping, you're wasting your sleep time. You need to get onto the baby's schedule for that first week to 10 days. Trust me, honey bun, you're going to feel way, 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 way better if that's what you do. Keep that baby home for the first 40 days and 40 nights. Keep yourself in your pajamas for at least the first 2 weeks. Don't plan to go anywhere or do anything or host anything. If do, you're going to increase your chances of infection. You're going to reduce your chances of breastfeeding successfully establishing. You're going to increase your chances of your baby getting an infection, and you're going to increase your chances of the baby not successfully establishing its latch, and lots of other icky things you don't want to go through. So for that first few days, I just want you to do nothing but feed your baby and sleep, okay? Sleep when your baby sleeps, feed when your baby feeds, wee and poo when your baby wees and poos. Well, not literally at the same time, but take the same opportunity of around that time, okay? Get on their schedule. And the other thing is make sure that you're taking a really good multivitamin, multi-mineral throughout that entire period of lactation. The commonest reason I've found that women are feeling bad and they're getting more infections and wounds aren't healing well and things can be simply that they're low in some trace mineral. Look, it might be zinc or something, because remember, your body is going to take from you to give to your baby and leave you depleted. So make sure that you are taking a good multi in that time. And with your womb and wound infections, I cannot recommend highly enough the cream called Hypercal, which stands for Hypericum and Calendula. Hypericum is a most fantastic pain reliever, really. It just sort of a natural antiseptic. It sort of takes the sting out of pain, the sharpness out of pain, and you mix it with calendula, which is a skin healing promoter. And when you've got Hypericum and calendula, you've got the product called Hypercal, and that is unbelievably fantastic, incredible, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing to apply to your wounds. So once the dressings come off your cesarean scar, just put it on two or three times a day. And what can be quite good is that if you put that Hypercal lotion onto the scar and then put a sanitary pad on top of it, and that's really quite, makes things a bit more comfortable, and wear some really high-waisted undies that are not rubbing on that bikini line. With nipples, you can use Hypercal for that as well. It's absolutely fantastic. There's nothing toxic in it for your baby, but I would wipe it off gently before feeding a baby, only because it makes your nipples a bit sort of more slippery and you want baby to get a good latch. So after every feed, put a little bit of Hypercal on. Fantastic. But certainly the perineum, oh my God, let it just live in the toilet, and every time you pull your pants down, slather it on. Especially if you had an episiotomy. And I can tell you honestly that with my private clients, I have never had a woman have a perineal infection after birth from when they've been using Hypercal. Never. It's amazing stuff. Okay, so, and you can just get it at a health shop or online with health stores. It's really a naturopathic, a homeopathic product, but it sort of comes under the naturopathic sort of categories as well. All right, so next on to the baby. So as long as that baby is vigorous, you know, it's not just lethargic and doing nothing. You want a vigorous baby, vigorous suckling, vigorous crying, vigorous physical movement. It should be vigorous. Also on its personality, because some babies are just a little bit more gentle and content, and some babies are feisty. So, and you should have wet naps coming through, and baby's poos should be transitional at this stage, day 3 or 4. You need to make sure that you are feeling confident with recognizing minor illnesses and things that you can treat at home, which particularly would be conjunctivitis, sticky eye, and nappy rash. So make sure you've got some clues on those. Don't hesitate to ask a health professional, but you know, you should have some information and be reading up on them. And all the information you need is in my book, Oh Baby. So that would be a good place to start. All right, what else? Oh, armpits and groins. Certainly, I've seen a lot of mums with home visits where they have not even realised that there's actually quite a lot of gunk accumulating in the folds of their baby's armpits or groin creases. So please do just sort of pull all those creases apart and make sure that you're cleaning them out and patting them down. And talcum powder can be really good too. If they look a little bit red and moist and a bit annoyed because you've had some gunky, mucky stuff in there that's annoyed the skin, just pat them down really dry and dust some talcum powder on them. One of my favorites, I would have to say, is the brand Q-Rash, C-U-R-A-S-H, Cure the Rash, Q-Rash, and that's a great little talc, but some people don't really feel that it's quite natural enough, and that's absolutely fine, but that's a real sort of supermarket sort of brand that you can get, but it does do the job. And if you want to be a little bit more purist with it and naturopathic with it, yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. There's also some other lots of fantastic little brands around of beautiful, beautiful talcum powders for babies. Also, what else I want to talk to you about, crying, make sure that you have got my Why They Cry sheet. Now, you should have that. That should have, somewhere along the process of being part of our tribe, you should have that. But make sure you've got it, that it's on the fridge, that you understand all those little symptoms, the signs and symptoms of what each cry is, so that you can know how to interpret it. Knowing the difference between a hungry cry, an overtired cry, a tired cry, an overfed cry, all these things. And then you've got all the sort of slightly more complicated ones, like the reflux cry, colic cry. Oh, what else? I've had a mind blank. Cow's milk protein allergy cry, lactose intolerance cry. There's just so many different things. So make sure you've got the Why They Cry reference sheet on your fridge or on your coffee table. And also make sure that you've got the corner folded in the Why They Cry chapter of my book, because that goes into a lot more detail on all of those, so you can really nail it and you know exactly what cry is going on. Because that's your job. Your job is not to stop your baby crying. Your job is to interpret the cries and understand what they each mean, because there's all different ones. And so often people have sort of said to me, you know, they might hear a baby cry and they say, can you tell what their cry is? And I go, yeah, that's an overtired cry. They go, really? How can you tell me? Well, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I can tell. Or they can say, what's that cry? I'm like, that is a hungry cry. You better get that baby on the breast, because it's going to get really, really angry soon. So, yeah, even without seeing the baby, I can tell this what cry it is from the sound of it. There really is a universal language with babies. In fact, there are and when the babies start to make cooing noises, when they get quite often before they even 6 weeks of age, they'll start to make sounds that are definitely not cries, and they're starting to sort of make their own cooing noises and like conversational sort of sounds, which is just delightful, quite delicious actually to listen to them. And there's theories that all babies are born understanding the same language, and the reason that they end up speaking our language is because they have to learn it to communicate with us. And often along the way, you will have perhaps heard of twins who have developed their own language that they completely understand, their own little secret language. So it is really interesting. But it all starts with those cries. Even though every baby is different, their cries are very universally got the same sort of sounds to them that have the same meanings. Okay, so jaundice. Now, two more things I want to talk to you about. Firstly, jaundice. All right. So jaundice, which is your baby starting to look a little bit yellow, that starts to appear generally around sort of day two to three, and it will peak typically at around day five, and it should be completely gone by around day sort of 10 to and day 14 on the outside. Or if your baby is premature, so that means born before 37 weeks, then we often will give those babies more up to about 3 weeks to be able to sort of get rid of their jaundice, and that's still regarded as normal. So what is it? Well, you know when you have a bruise and a few days down the track that bruise is starting to look yellow? Well, that yellow pigment is called bilirubin, and bilirubin is sort of part of what makes up blood cells. And so by the time the red part is disappeared of your bruise and you kind of get to this yellow part, then that's the same yellow part that we start to see in babies, because all babies are born with way more blood cells, red blood cells, than they need, going from intrauterine environment to the higher oxygen extrauterine environment. So that's why a few days in, they start to break down those, well, actually immediately they start to break down those excess red blood cells. And a few days later, we can start to see our babies going a little bit yellow. And certainly, I would have to say that with some darker skinned races, it can be harder to see. So, you know, if you're European, it's easy to pick it up. But if you know your baby is, because you are, darker skinned, then you probably need to be a little bit more vigilant, because And one of the most important things I would say, particularly with the darker skin babies, is you need to assess it in good sunlight. Like, you know, you can't, often you can miss it if the curtains are pulled across and you're just relying on a light in the room. Yeah, so you want to get really good light onto them to be able to assess them well. And what I would be doing myself is I would always strip a baby down when I'm doing home visits. I strip the baby right down to their nappy and I take them over to the window, and that's how I assess what their color is more accurately. So jaundice, funnily enough, goes from the head down. So seeing jaundice in their face, normal. Bit of a yellow face, normal. If it gets down to about their belly button, yeah, that's fine. It's mild. Don't stress about it. I mean, still check with your health professional, or somebody should be looking at your baby to check that as well. But in general terms, if it's going sort of down their legs, if it's down to their knees, that's getting a little bit more jaundice, and you want to keep a pretty good eye on it. See what, you know, every sort of, I don't know, 8 to 12 hours, I'd recheck it, to be honest. If it's getting down to all the way down their legs, well, yep, that definitely needs vigilant monitoring, and I would strongly be considering getting a blood test done on that baby and to check for sure exactly what that bilirubin level is like, especially if they're down to their ankles and they're not even at day 5 yet. So, because day 5 is when it peaks. But if it gets to the point that it's on their hands or their feet, that is strong and they should absolutely have a blood test. Or if it gets to the point that it's and a prompt blood test, and if it's on their palms of their hands or the soles of their feet or the whites of their eyes, that is a sign that it could be severe and they need phototherapy. So I would very promptly, same day, be getting them in for a blood test. If you can get into a local blood laboratory and they can, you know, do the test within a few hours, that's wonderful. But if it's late at night and they're all closed, I would take the baby in to back to birthing suite and get that baby assessed for a bilirubin check or into the emergency department, depending on whatever your local area is. Especially if they are lethargic, okay? Especially if they're lethargic. Now, the two things that you can do, actually three things that you can do to help reduce jaundice is basically give them lots of food, so frequent feeds, because that gives them lots of energy, and also make sure that they stay nice and warm, all right? Because if they get cold, stressed, they're using up their energy. And then the other thing that you can do is give them indirect sunlight as well. So that means stripping them down to just their nappy and put them near the window, but not with the sun actually on their skin, because obviously they'd get sunburnt. And yeah, indirect sunlight, so near the window, and in a very, very, very well-warmed room. It's so warm that if you were walking around naked, you would be going, gosh, I'm hot in this room. Or, you know, gee, I'm a bit warm in this room. Because remember, they've come from a temperature of 37 degrees just 3 or 4 days or 2 days ago. So they need to be in a warm room, all right? And if you're not sure if the room's warm enough or not, do their temperature. And as long as the baby is sitting in those low 37s or high 36s, then they're a good temperature. Okay, so look, that's everything that we're going to do today. There's one more topic that I want to talk about, but I'm going to put that into the next session, which is shaking baby syndrome, which we want to avoid. But I wish you all a wonderful week, and we will talk to you later. Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.